Ralph Ellison told you a long time ago, long before I did, what it was like to be the Invisible Man. And his long, long record, going back to the auction block, of what we really feel, we the blacks in this country. And what we really feel, we the blacks in this country, is a mirror of what you really feel. That's why we really feel that way.
Well, Mr. Baldwin, I don't feel qualified myself to speak on behalf of all white Americans, and I
wonder... But on the other hand, if I may interrupt you, I don't feel qualified to speak on behalf of all black Americans either. But it's very interesting that I would find myself in this position, and the only reason I am in this position is because all black Americans are treated like niggers. Sammy Davis Jr. to my mother. Now, what I'm trying to say to you is you can't really say that you're not qualified to speak on behalf of all white Americans if I'm treated the way all black Americans are treated in this country.
You still feel yourself treated in that fashion.
As long as my brother is, and I have four brothers and five sisters, and my mother is, and many, many more people than that are treated as they are, my being in the Beverly Hills Hotel has nothing to do with it.
But there are such dramatic exceptions, Mr. Baldwin, yourself being...
There are no exceptions.
Leontine Price...
There are no exceptions.
No exceptions?
No.
You're saying, in effect, then, that as long as black Americans
if
are
they don't
mistreated,
know that
you are mistreated.
If they don't know that she's Leontine Price, she still can't get a taxi.
It is a fact that the more we increase our armaments, the Soviet Union, China, and the United States, the more we increase our armaments, the more we decrease our national security. Every single scientific advisor to every president from President Eisenhower on down has said this and has said further, there is no technical solution to this contradiction. It's a political problem. The United States must wake up to this political fact, and yet we won't.
Your friends, we don't give a damn for what you're saying. We're here to live our lives. We are hungry men. We don't give a damn for what you're saying. We're here to eat you.
The cradle was rocked when the king was overthrown and the government of Mr. Papadopoulos took over.
In April 1967, a group of Greek military colonels forged a right-wing military junta and successfully led a coup d'etat that remained in power until 1974.
The present so-called government of Greece, the junta, has obviously not the support of the left politically, not the support of the center, but very importantly, it also lacks support from the political right. That is, it has no support at all. And the only thing that's keeping it up, really, is the United States government.
In 1968, Academy Award-nominated Greek actress Melina Mercouri was thrown into the political battle. Pacifica Radio was there to record her.
I called the Consul of Greece here in New York, Mr. Gavas, and I say, tomorrow I will be in the television, in the news, and I will denounce the junta. And then he said to me that if I don't stop to talk, then I will be punished. And I laughed, and I say, why, you will kill me?
As many of you may know, Melina Mercouri lost her Greek citizenship shortly after the military coup in Greece last year, because she was outspoken and quite articulate and quite vocal in opposition to the military takeover and in opposition to the fascist regime which took over. Instead of silencing her, the taking away of her Greek citizenship has made her even more vocal and more determined to continue to fight for the restoration of democracy in Greece.
Το λάβαρό μας γράφει. I have received thousands and thousands of letters from unknown people all over America expressing their love for my people and my country. And I have wept more than once when I found in the envelopes $1 or $5 with the words, "Dear Melina, please use this to help the return of democracy to Greece." And when I walk in the streets, people come to greet me and say, "Give them hell, Melina, give those fascists hell." I cannot tell you the comfort and the courage that has been given to me by the American people. So how painful it is to me to deplore the official American position. I urge you to write to your president. I urge you to write to your State Department and your representatives. Believe me, they want to hear from you. They have told me so. Military aid to Greece must stop. Economic aid to Greece must stop. Tourism to Greece must stop. American investments to Greece must be discouraged, not encouraged. Acts of barbarism must stop. Political prisoners must be freed. Democracy must return. Civil war must be prevented. I urge you to act now. Time is not on our side. Thank you.
This is H.R.A.P. Brown, and good afternoon. So black people this year, young black people, like Thomas Smith, John Carlos, mounted the victory stand, which they rightfully won, and wearing black gloves, black socks, no shoes. And when the Star Spangled Banner was played, they clenched their fists in an act of defiance, saying that, yes, we are black. Carlos likened the white attitude toward black athletes to the relationship between trainers and show horses or elephants. If we do a good job, he said, they'll throw us some peanuts or pat us on the back and say, good boy.
Olympic gold medalist John Carlos talked about the action in 1975 with sports sociologist Jonathan Brower on KPFK Los Angeles.
We just wanted to let black people throughout the world know, you know, that we ran representing them. We were trying to tell black people and minority people that they're going to have to become more united to stand against the struggles that they have in front of them. And all the words in the national anthem didn't cover black people or minority people. And I didn't feel that I should go up there and stand up at attention and applaud something I disagree with totally. You know, I'd be being hypocritical to myself.
If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream.
We continue now with coverage of events that occurred earlier today in connection with the Yippies and the national mobilization to end the war in Vietnam. Here is Allen Ginsberg.
The conditions in Chicago at present are very similar to the authoritarian Marxist conditions in Prague in 65 and 68 today. The ban on demonstrations proposes violence. The state proposes violence when it doesn't allow younger people to assemble calmly and peacefully without the sound of motorcycles.
There are two Democratic Party conventions in Chicago in August of 1968. One is inside the International Amphitheater with banners and placards and gavels and speeches. The other is in the streets and parks of Mayor Richard Daley's city with tear gas and rocks and mace and clubs, and most of all, with blood. And a cloud marked Vietnam hangs over both, tangling them together. Separate the strands. Go back to a snowy winter in New Hampshire, when a northern senator named Eugene McCarthy tramps the streets, braves the cold, and challenges a president.
In which I challenge a Democratic president. I challenge a particular policy in Vietnam.
Move forward to a spring day when another senator, this one named Kennedy, announces he too will seek to take the nomination from the president.
I am announcing today my candidacy for the presidency of the United States.
Come forward a bit more when that president tells the nation he will not seek re-election.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Go to Los Angeles, where one man wins an election and loses his life.
Hold out! Move back out! Give him room!
Yeah, there's a pool of blood on the ground, naturally. I think he was shot in the head.
With that chronicle, come to Chicago in August of 1968. Come as a delegate with the proper credentials to get you past the police, into the amphitheater, into the hotel suites and the delegations. Hear the talk of Eugene McCarthy, the name of Edward Moore Kennedy, the politics of joy of Hubert Humphrey. Feel the unseen presence of Lyndon Johnson. Or come to what they are calling the Festival of Life, the street theater, the anti-war demonstrations, the hippies, the yippies, into the park, smell the incense, the marijuana, hear the music, hear the speeches, hear the laughter. Inside or outside, take your choice. Some of the delegates inside take offense at Chicago Mayor Richard Daley's tactics both inside the amphitheater and outside in the streets. Daley, himself a delegate, uses tactics inside the hall that are reminiscent of what his police are using outside. When the delegates protest, Mayor Daley tries to adjourn the convention, and the protest grows.
Will the convention be in order? Will the sergeant at arms enforce order in the convention? Will the convention be in order? Will the convention be in order? Because may the chairman make a brief statement. May I make a brief statement? It is not in order to make a general motion to adjourn, because that would kill the convention. The chair would gladly recognize the distinguished mayor of the city of Chicago to adjourn to a time certain, such as 12 o'clock tomorrow. Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn to 12 o'clock tomorrow. The question is on the motion. So many as in favor will vote aye.
Aye!
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Accordingly, the House stands adjourned until 12 o'clock noon tomorrow.
Convention Chairman Carl Albert. Senator Wayne Morse of Oregon describes the major conflict in the platform on Vietnam.
Issues whether or not the Democratic Convention is going to vote today to continue to kill American boys in South Vietnam. We can't possibly justify this killing of our boys. We've got to have a change in policy, and I hope the Democratic Party will take advantage of the opportunity to unite the party. And they'll never unite this party unless they change the policy in Vietnam.
But the convention refuses to heed Morse's words. It votes a plank supporting President Johnson's Vietnam War policies.
Good evening. This is Pacifica Radio, Chicago. This is Pacifica Radio's continuing coverage of the 1968 Democratic National Convention from the International Amphitheater in Chicago's Stockyards area. This is Steve Bookchester along with Dale Miner. Here at the amphitheater, we've had a long, very interesting, somewhat confused night here. Earlier this evening, the unit rule was abolished for at least this Democratic National Convention. Now we've just passed a vote on the seating of a minority group, a minority report on the Texas delegation, actually. And in that vote, which was considered as well as the earlier vote, the test of Humphrey's strength, the Texas delegation will be seated as it was picked with Governor John Connally's Texas Democratic Party. That was a 1,200 to 800 vote in favor of seating the regular delegation.
Seems I've got to have a change of scene, 'cause every night I have the strangest dream. Prison by the way it could be. Left here on my own, or so it seems. I've got to leave before I start to scream. Someone's locked the door and took the key. You're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good myself. Well, you're feeling alright?
Myself. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
This is our trouble today. All Negroes, so-called Negroes, worry about is money.
Muhammad Ali, from the Pacifica Radio Archives.
He's like the white man now. He'll blow up his mama for some money and sell out his people for some money. That's why we're nowhere today, because all the big Negroes with some money is up on the hill with the white folks, riding with the white folks, going to church with the white folks, marrying the white folks, shuffling and tomming and loving white folks. And they forget all about the brother down there in Harlem. His rent's due, living in a bad home, standing on the corner, nobody know him, nobody want him. And he rides by in his limousine. Well, let them niggas make it like me. I can't take no chance on losing my money. Once we become followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the flesh and the blood of our people is more important than the white man's money. Money don't mean nothing if you're black to the white man. I don't care if you can buy a $500 house or a $500,000 house, you still a nigger. Now, many of our people make protests and say they're going to boycott and they're going to do this and do that. And then when the white man put the pressure on them, they back up. But I'm one who I hope and pray to Allah and his messenger, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that I be one black man that they can look at and say, turned down all $10 million in commercials, royalties, turned down the world heavyweight title. Where is he at? There he is, over there, sitting on the garbage can with the wine heads. He don't have to be over there. There he is, talking to the prostitute. There he is, picking up the brother out alley, taking him to the Muslim temple. There he is, selling a prostitute a Muslim newspaper. Ain't that something? He really don't have to do it. See, they have to look at me now, greater than just in a boxing ring. Good fight, boy. White man got all the money. Two Negroes cut each other up, and he pat him on the back. Good fight, boy. Great fight, boy. Good show, boy. Good dancing, boy. Huh? But they can't look at me like that. See, I get all respect because I follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You may not like Rap Brown or Stokely Carmichael, but they get more respect than the richest Negroes in America, the most white folks loving Negroes in America. When Rap Brown and Stokely Carmichael walk down the tree, traffic stops. Rap Brown, where? There he is. Stokely Carmichael, where? White folks jumping out of windows looking at him, wanting to touch him. They admire warriors because they are warriors. They believe in dying and fighting for what they believe. They're giving up $90 million a day in Vietnam and the guts of their children for a principle. They died and fought the Indians. Money don't mean nothing when your people are free and hungry and catching hell. So all of these so-called Negroes listening to this show, I hope you learned something from this. Damn some money when it comes to your mama's freedom. You're so quick to go to Vietnam and fight and shoot and kill somebody you don't know, fighting so they can be free, and you come home and you get your head busted. So if I gotta die, if I gotta sacrifice, if I gotta suffer, let it be for my black brothers and sisters. Let it be for my mama and not somebody 10,000 miles from here. So when you understand what I'm saying, when you weigh it out, if it means money or Tom, damn the money.
There's a train coming. Don't need no baggage. You just get on board. All we need is faith to hear the diesels humming. Don't need no tickets. We'll just thank the Lord.
Thank the Lord.
People get ready.
And that does it for this week's edition of From the Vault, celebrating the 40th anniversary of 1968. This program was written, edited, and mixed by Mark Torres. The series is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. I'm Mark Torres, and thanks for listening.